Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Welcome, everyone, to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil. I'm Brent Smith, as my buddy alongside of me, once again, Shane Stetsny, and we're going to cover coming into Bark River Weekend. But first, man, a legend has left us.
Yeah, unfortunately, just a couple days ago, Saturday night, Walker Evans passed away. He was 86 years old. The resume, I mean, it speaks for itself. Over 140 career wins in the desert, in short course, and some other things. Over 20 career championships. He was inducted into the Off-Road Motorsports Hall of Fame in 2004. I think what the older crowd here in short course already knows, but maybe the younger people don't know, is that every place that short course has grown to, how big it's gotten since the 80s, is really owed to Walker Evans and his rivalry with Jack Flannery. So Jack, you know, he was the king of the Midwest in the 70s and 80s. He was looking to get out of the Midwest a little bit, race against some new people, and really see how he stacked up. So he went out to Riverside in the 80s, which was Walker's hometown and his hometown track. Went out there and raced against Walker, and then did really well out there. So Walker said, all right, I'm going to come back to Crandon. I'm going to come to Jack's turf. And then when Walker did that, that opened the floodgates. I mean, Robbie Gordon, Rob McHacker, and Spencer Lowe, some of those other early names from the late 80s, early 90s that came and raced at Crandon. That's what made this all blow up. So everything that we have right now, and in part, we owe to Walker Evans.
Oh, 120%. You are correct, because just without Walker, it wouldn't have been off-road racing growing up as a kid. And you got to come and watch Walker Evans and Jack Flannery go at it. That's what it was all about. They were the big dogs of the sport, and they still are in my eyes. They always will be. I mean, the legends that we've lost in the last 3-4 years are just crazy to think about. But I mean, Walker, he lived a long, great life. And I mean, I think he won his last championship at what, 61 years old or 62?
Yeah, would have been about
in that. In 99. Yeah, yeah. And it was unbelievable to see that go down, and just showed you how much work and time and effort he put behind his crew and his team. I mean, the long nights he would fly across country just to make it to Crandon.
Yeah, and I was really fortunate to cross paths with Walker a handful of different times, more as a kid than as an adult. But him and my dad were really close for a good many years. So I'll try to keep the story brief because it's a little bit self-indulgent. But my dad worked for Jack Flannery in the late 80s through the early 90s, just to the beginning of the Chevy Thunder years. Obviously, that's when the rivalry between Jack and Walker was huge. So there was, at one point, Jack went out west to race, probably at Riverside. They needed to do a bunch of work on his truck, so Walker invited Jack, my dad, and everybody else over to Walker's shop. And my dad and Walker became friends. My dad actually helped him out at a Mint 400 race in the late 80s, and they remained friends. And anybody that follows me on social media saw that I have a photo of Walker holding me when I was, I think, 2 years old. Certainly, I would wager that's in the pits at Crandon is where the photo was taken. So I was really fortunate to, you know, not only idolize him on the racetrack, but to be close to him at various points.
Yeah, and that's what makes it so special for you. And I mean, it almost brought a tear to my eye just watching and looking through all the old photos of Walker Evans, because what he just meant to the sport and to you and I and my twin brother, it just seemed like the days weren't the same if Walker wasn't in the class. And just what he's done time and time again, to see you bond with those old photos is great. I mean, your dad and mom just handed you off to people, but yeah. Hey, it was Walker Evans, right?
Yeah, and kind of an epilogue to that photo. So I, as a gift, I was given that photo blown up to like a 17x9. This is probably 15 years ago now, and I had it was framed, and just that it was already a treasured thing that I had. And then at some point in the mid 2010s, when Ram Trucks was sponsoring short course racing, as part of that tie-in, Walker Evans was showing up and giving people rides in the two-seat Pro 2 Pace truck that they had. So I started carrying that photo with me, and at the time I wasn't announcing racing at all. I was just a guy with a picture, but I was bringing that picture to racetracks. Finally had a chance to cross paths with Walker, and I don't remember who he was staying with in the camper, but I had run into that person, and I said, hey, is Walker, it was at night. I said, is Walker still up? I have this photo of him holding me when I was a kid. I want to have him sign it. And she knocked on the door of the trailer and he poked his head out. And, you know, she said, hey, this guy has a photo he wants you to sign. And I showed him the picture and he smiled and said, come on in. So he invited me into the camper, which is awesome because this is me as an adult hanging out with Walker, who I idolized as a kid.
Acting like a kid, though, right? Yeah. This is the best day of your life.
Yeah, trying not to be too starstruck.
Love it.
But he signed the photo to Shane, How the Years Fly By, Your Friend Walker Evans. And I still have it. It's on my mantle right now. It's, like I said, it's one of my absolute most cherished possessions that I have. And then the extra epilogue to this story, maybe 4 or 5 years after that, I ran into Walker at a race out on the West Coast. And I said, hey, you probably don't remember me, but, you know, my dad's Larry. You signed a photo of you holding me as a little kid. And he said, I remember that. He had taken a picture on his cell phone, or the other person took a picture on his phone of the two of us holding the photo. And he said, I've shown other people that picture of you and me holding that picture.
Oh,
which
kind
of speaks to the character of the guy as well.
Yeah, and that's what I felt about him too. You just felt right at home. He took time for all his friends and family and his fans, and that was the biggest part that I fed off of Walker Evans. And just to be around him and Evan Evans, I mean, his son, I mean, it's just crazy the legacy that he has shown us. And to see now him and Jack Flannery not around anymore, that's what started this whole thing.
Two guys who are unanimously on the Mount Rushmore of short course off-road racing. Do you have any specific memories of Walker? It's like watching him race.
Man, I do remember the Dodge trucks at Bark River as a young kid. I mean, it had to be, I would say, the early 90s. I would say 93, 94. I do not have one of those tapes anymore, so I couldn't tell you exactly what day or time it was. But just him running out front, right? Just being a badass.
Yeah.
No matter where he started. I mean, he started way out on the track at Crandon. He'd get to turn one for first, him and Robbie Gordon, no matter what, him and Jack Flannery. It just seemed like no matter where he was placed, he would show up at the end and make it all happen and take that checkered flag first. There was times where, hey, you know, the race was long, hard-fought battles, but at the end of the day, he'd wait. And to finish first, you have to finish. And I believe he did that earlier in his career, and then he just put a spanking on everyone.
Yeah, that's kind of my memories of seeing him, you know, especially when I was a really little kid. Like I said, the early days of Jack Flannery driving as part of the Chevy Thunder program. Obviously, Jack from Crandon. I'm from Crandon. My dad was really close friends with Jack because they had raced against each other. And so I was a huge Jack Flannery fan. And I remember Walker just kicking Jack's butt up and down the racetrack at Crandon. And, you know, I didn't like it too much, but, you know, treasured memories now that I'm able to look back on those days.
Yeah,
he's going to be missed by the whole community for sure.
Yeah, I can't wait to just share all the memories with everyone coming up to Bark River. And, you know, he'll be never forgotten. And it's just cool. We got to live all those great 140 career victories and, man, 20 championships. Just unreal what he's done for our sport. And 86 years old, man, I hope I can make her that far.
Yeah, a life well lived, no doubt about it. Well, looking at the task at hand, the 2025 season, you know, we talked a lot at Lena about how Lena becomes the turning point just by where it's placed on the schedule when it comes to the championship battles. The pro championships, still a lot of intrigue there. There's a couple that are a little bit out of hand already, but you look at Pro 2, you've got Keegan Kincaid 49 points ahead of Ryan Beat. In Pro Light, Johnny Holcher, a 37-point lead over Connor Berry. Remember Connor Berry, that crazy win that he had in round 10 at Lena where he rolled, never even lost the lead, took off and held on. Pro Buggy is a really good one. There's really three cars that are right in the thick of it. Billy Booth is 18 points ahead of Jordan Burnlore, and only 3 points further back is the Big Tuna, Chaden Minder. Pro Spec, just like we expected, a tight battle there. Wyatt Miller trailing Chris Vanden Elsen by 14. And Pro Side-by-Side, Owen Van Epren with a 1-point lead over Jeb Boodle and the defending champ CJ Greaves 41 points back of the lead. Which one of those, I think the answer is maybe a little obvious, but out of those, which ones do you see coming right down to the finale out in Glen Helen?
Man, obviously pro side-by-side is one to watch, but the pro buggy, right? We were talking about it in Lena. I mean, Billy Booth, 18 points ahead, but I feel like he has that momentum going. He has all that positive attitude. Jordan Bernlohr is fast, but I believe that is the class to watch. I mean, we talk about everyone turning into buggy dorks, and you've been leaning my way a lot in the past 2 years, and I just love the pro buggy division. I really do. I love my trucks, but that pro buggy class, it's anybody's game, but Billy Booth is showing the way.
Yeah, and I, you know, just to play devil's advocate a little bit, and Billy Booth's been here before, not in pro buggy, but in 1600 and light buggies, won championships in both of those classes. Bernlohr, obviously the defending champ from a year ago, he really locked up the championship last year by getting hot at the end of the season. And Jordan's already kind of taken some lumps earlier this year. If he can put together a run like he did last year, he can easily snatch that lead away from Billy Booth. And I think Minder might have the highest ceiling of all of them. I mean, just the speed that he's shown. And remember, he's still a kid. He's still kind of settling into racing in pro buggy and racing against these guys. And he's as fast as anybody.
Yeah, Big Tuna has a lot of confidence coming in the last five rounds of the season, Shane. And you can just feel it watching him go through these tracks. He's very methodical. He knows how to pick a track apart. But Billy Booth, getting back to him, is he going to settle in and want these top threes? I'm asking you specifically because watching him, he's a guy that wants to be there for the point championship, but he'll put different races together. I mean, he wants to win everyone, but is this the point in time where, hey, I have to be in the top three no matter what?
That's looking ahead at, and Bark River is kind of, we'll talk about this later, but Bark River historically is where we see desperation from the guys who are a little more distant in the points. Mm-hmm. And it kind of is the part of the schedule where you start thinking about that as a driver. You know, is Billy Booth going to go for broke, trying to make a last lap pass for second if he's running in third? Or is he going to play the points game a little bit? That's really the question. I don't know the answer to that. But like I said, Billy Booth has been there before in the other two buggy classes, so he knows how to play the game.
Right, and I agree with you as well. And it's just, I love to just think outside and see what these guys are trying to put together, because I'm, as a race car driver myself, no matter what you plan, and you know Shane too as well, everything goes out the window and you got to take what's given to you. And I feel like everyone in that pro buggy division, even in pro spec, they're so smart. They know how to capitalize on a guy's bad day. So I'm very interested to see these last five rounds because, man, guys like Keaton Kincaid, you got to feel blessed right now having a 49-point lead in Pro 2.
Well, there are a couple of classes with even bigger points leads. Pro 4, you've got the 9-time champ, CJ, leading Jimmy Henderson by 90 points.
Wow.
And then Pro Stock is, who would have predicted this? Pro Stock, Owen Van Epperen, 106 points ahead of CJ Greaves. CJ is in second, by the way. That's the margin from first to second. Just as a note, the most points you can get in one round is 57. You can get 50 for a win, 2 for leading at the half, and then an additional 5 for being the top qualifier. So even if Owen would skip Saturday in Bark River, he would still have like a 39-point lead at least over CJ.
Wow, and you got to give him credit because that's what he's built up throughout the year. He's been a rocket ship. He's been so fast. He capitalizes on people's mistakes. He's putting himself in that inversion and being right there where, yeah, granted, you got to pass some cars, but he knows the guys around him and he's really smart at what he does. And he's one to watch these next 2-3 years. I mean, I think we're reforming another CJ Greaves.
Yeah. I mean, the way that it's gone for Owen and Pro Stock, the way that I've thought about this is kind of to win a championship, your bad days have to still be pretty good days. And that's exactly how it's gone for Owen in Pro Stock. Even when he's not 100% on top of his game or something doesn't quite go right on the car, he's still making the most of it. And then when everything does go right, my goodness, he's unstoppable.
Yeah, and it just seems like throughout the race, like you say, when he has a bad day, he makes up for it. But it seems like, man, okay, Owen's in 12th, 13th, and at the end of the day, we do our final results, and we're like, man, how did he get back in the top five that quick? But he's got it all together, and he's mirrored together very well. Yeah.
Well, there are a couple, you know, sportsmen have fewer rounds remaining. They only have 4 rounds left. So let's check in on a few sportsman division close points battles that we have. Super Stock Truck, the crowd favorite. And this is all going to be adjusted points, by the way. I've been working on my spreadsheets. they'll be ready here in the next day or so, where every single class I'll know all the adjusted points. That's me patting myself on the back a little bit so I can stay on top of these numbers. Super stock truck, adjusted points. Nick Bing and Braden Boshaw tied at 381. Corey Holcher, 7 points back. And then Belanger and Colt Wurzba still in the fight, but a little bit of work to do. And again, though, it's kind of playing out how we thought it would, where the usual suspects are at the front of the point standings. And Superstock, again, looks like it's going to come down to the final day at Crandon once again.
Yeah, and that's why we love this class so much. One of our favorite classes on the weekend, no matter what. And Nick Bing, he has been so fast, no matter what. I mean, coming out of
fast, yeah, too.
And then in Wheatland, Missouri, it seemed like we were talking how he's a second half guy. He's turned that whole ball game around and put our own foot in our mouths and said, "Hey, you know, I could be a first half guy too as well." And he's been showing every bit of speed he needs to throughout the whole race, and that's not what we've seen in the past, really. And he's really shown a lot in his program, his who's behind him, and he's got a lot of years in the class. But Braden Boshaw, we come into Bark River. This is hometown turf. And I believe last year he swept the weekend.
To talk more about Braden and kind of circle back on the point I was making about Owen Van Epperen and minimizing the bad days. Well, Braden had two bad days at Lena, and not the good kind of bad day. He had just two, you know, flat out bad days. So that's kind of what's hurt him at this point, looking at those point standings.
Yeah, and he really did take one for the team a couple different times, and he knew it. And we went back there multiple times and talked with him, and he somehow stays positive. His dad's been through the ups and downs, multiple championships, so you watch him grinding on that truck, and they got it figured out. I mean, you're going to have your headaches here and there, but it's who can bounce back the quickest. And I feel Scott Belanger and Colt Wurzba, these tracks are good for them as well. I mean, you know Belanger. You get that truck out in clean air, it's hard to reel him back in.
Yeah, Belanger, the first half of his season was kind of a series of ups and downs where he'd win one day, I think two straight weekends. He had a really bad day and then would win the other day. Both Antigo and Crandon, I think that's where that happened to him. And again, especially in a little bit bigger class, minimizing the bad days is really crucial to having a shot at the points. But man, if Belanger can get hot through these last four rounds, we know what it looks like when he's as, you know, on his A game, when everything falls into place for him. He's as fast or faster than anybody in the class.
Yeah, you don't want to see him knock down a couple wins if you're in that class, because once he has that going, he really does. You know, he has the trucks to get the wins behind him, because look at what Visser did with his backup truck, right? I mean,
great to see Nick jump in his old stomping grounds, and that's what he did. He stomped on him in that race.
He really did.
Well, Light Buggy is another really fun points battle. Again, this is all adjusted points with the tentative two drop rounds already factored in. Jake Shillman, 2 points ahead of Greg Stingle. Another 6 points behind them is Evan Hockers. And then Connor Schultz, even with the number of bad days that he's had, he's 30 points back of Shillman, 4 rounds left. We were kind of pronouncing his points championship hopes dead on arrival before Lena. And then Connor does the Connor thing, went out, swept both days in Light Buggy. All of a sudden, he's got a shot at this thing. Do you think that Connor can make up 30 points to those guys?
Well, if anyone can get it done, I believe Connor can. I mean, he goes on one of these win streaks to end the season. Hey, it could be a whole different ball game. But these guys in this division are no slouchers. Look at Stingle. I mean, been around a long, long time. He knows how to be smart through the whole year. He knows where to put the car. He likes to just take the best spot he can at any given time, even if it's not a win, but you'll see him on that podium and those gather those points. I mean, the points race is one thing, but Hockers with that new car, he's really showing he belongs there as well.
By the way, Shillman and Hockers each got their first career wins at Bark River over the last couple of years.
Oh,
so something to keep an eye on. Both of those guys extremely fast up there at Bark River.
Yeah, the Light Buggy division, it's always fun to watch, and I'm excited to get back to Bark River and watch these cars really get up and go, though, Shane. It's going to be amazing.
Well, short course kart, which has, I think, become maybe one of our like top four favorite classes to call over the last couple of years. Just knockdown, drag out racing, a whole bunch of different kids able to get wins this season. The points in short course kart, kind of down to three leading contenders, but the Tolberg brothers, Jacoby and Roman, separated by 3 points. Gabe Holcher, 20 points back of Jacoby for the lead. It's kind of belonged to the Tolberg brothers this year, but again, that class is so competitive, and it's about minimizing bad days, right?
Oh, yes. And you got to take them and move forward no matter what. And whoever has the best luck is going to win at the end of the year. And I say it time and time again, because the late Rick Husman, he always said it, you know, 80% of it was luck, 20% was just gathering everything else up. And it's hard to say that at the end of the day, but it really is. You can be in the wrong place at the wrong time and really cost you big time in the points.
A lot of the sportsman point standings with those drop rounds are going to come down to, for sure, Crandon. I mean, there are no runaway points leaders, even on unadjusted points. But one more I do want to talk about, 1600 buggy. We like close points battles. On adjusted points, Taylor Roloff and Mike Seifelt are tied for the points lead.
Yeah. And
we, you know, as we kind of browbeat this a little bit, but talking about confidence, when Taylor won that race in round 9 at Lena, and then got up on the podium, he brought some heat up there, and it feels like, you know, obviously Seifelt is a champion from a couple of years ago and as confident and capable as anybody, but man, Taylor Roloff is confident right now.
Yeah, confidence, an understatement for him right now. It's awesome to see him that positive and know that if he puts all his ducks in a row, he can get the job done, and he's really telling the drivers. It's not being cocky. I mean, you can point fingers any way you want, but as a driver myself, if you don't lay that confidence out there, anybody will run right over you, right? If you have that confidence, it's a lot harder to get by that guy.
Well, speaking of confidence, nothing gives competitors confidence like Amsoil. And if you love power and performance and saving money, Amsoil preferred customers can save up to 25% on Amsoil products and receive free shipping, exclusive promotions, and more. So to give yourself the confidence, whether it's out on the trail or in your daily driver, visit Amsoil.com and sign up today. Well, now we're glad to be joined by our guest on this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. From Light Buggy, it is Tom Perryman. Tom, thanks for spending some time on a busy race week for hanging out with us.
Yeah, no problem, guys. It's an honor to be here. I'm actually really shocked. It's pretty cool. So you guys ready for Bark River?
Not even close.
I am. To watch, yes, but no, I mean, it's the big track. It's Bark River. It's just a lot to be excited about.
Just as a peek behind the curtain, I guess, for the listeners, I'm in the middle of moving, so my house is in total disarray. I haven't had much chance to, like, dive in on racing stuff yet.
Oh, you don't hire that out, Shane?
Sure. I keep trying to call you about it, but you don't answer my calls.
Sport mod actually came first, so that's something that I wanted to do since I was a kid, and I was really ready to turn circles, and then went racing with the R&S guys. They were kind of picking up on the dirt bike scene towards the end of me getting it out there, and got hurt, and that summer the car just sat. Then Taylor Roloff, you know, he's been a best buddy of mine for a long, long time, and going into the fall that year, at his wedding, he asked me if I wanted to race his light buggy. And I was like, no, I got this sport mod, and, you know, I had a lot going on with it, but slept on it and felt it was too good of an opportunity to pass up. So that next season, which was last year, we hit the ground running in both cars. Yeah, man, Taylor, he deserves all the credit, man. I would not be an off-road without him. We've been really good buddies for probably 15, 20 years now, but it all started on dirt bikes. I've been racing dirt bikes since I was a kid. We had some mutual friends. In our early 20s, he reached out and we teamed up, and we were chasing races hard, you know, doing 20, 25 moto races a season together. And then he got into off-road. I had never been to a single off-road or anything like that. And fall Crandon of 2018, he was like, you got to come check this out. And I did. And then that next year he got a light buggy and we went and teamed up and I spotted for him. And then it was just kind of a spectator, just bopping in and out with the R&S team, coming to certain races. And then the opportunity with light buggy came in and here we are full time.
Do you find that, so Mikey Vandenhoevel 10 years ago told me, if you can win in light buggy, you can win in anything. Do you find that driving the light buggy, even though it's a completely different car from your sport mod, it's actually helping you out a bunch on the dirt tracks?
Yeah. I mean, I really think it's a lot like a dirt bike and how you carry your momentum and how you're going to read the track and not scrubbing it off. There was a learning curve between like the B mod and the light buggy, just in like with the sport mod, if you're going to loop out, you're getting back in the throttle, where in the light buggy, you got to get off the gas and let the car come back. So there was a little bit of a learning curve early on, but I feel really comfortable in both cars. So like they're really at a point where it's fun to race them now.
Yeah. And that's what makes it huge though. I mean, in anything, if you can adapt to the car or get it set up to what you like, it makes things a lot less stressful. Like you were talking about before we got on here, that you have your car already prepped for Bark River. So, I mean, just to get that out of your head, you don't have to be so crazy with your thoughts coming into a big weekend.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And I'm really looking forward to Bark River. Last year during this part, we were chasing some electrical stuff, and we didn't really get it figured out until the Sunday at Bark River. And then things really started to click in the buggy for me ever since that Sunday. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's a hometown race for my sponsors. So I'm really looking to put my best foot forward and put one up on the box this weekend.
Yeah, I was looking at your stats from last year. It seemed like you said, now it makes perfect sense why the numbers came out that way. But you ended the season with a sixth, I think, at the second day of Bark River, or the final day of Bark River last year, and then fifth and fourth at Crandon. You know, you jump ahead to this year, first half of the season, you already got your first win in light buggy. Most drivers take years to get that fast in light buggy. There's some guys that have raced it for 5 or 6 years and still haven't even finished on the podium. Why do you think it came so quickly for you?
R&S Motorsports is a huge part of it. I'm not even going to play like it's not. These guys, sure. I mean, look at Connor and Colin, and Taylor. I mean, Taylor was a very talented light buggy driver too, but those twins, they got these things dialed, man. Like, they know how to get them to go fast. So I jumped into good equipment right off the bat. You know, this Flying Dutchman car, this thing is just planted wherever I go. You know, I got Colin doing my motor work for me and Shock Tech doing my shocks, giving me basically the same package that Connor has. So really good equipment goes a long way. And then I was just a sponge. You know, last year, you know, I watched what those guys do and how they're tearing their cars down and how they're prepping them. And, you know, I learned in my motocross days that, you know, to be the best, you should mimic the best and watch what they're doing. And it's not just on the track. So just learning as much as I possibly can from those guys. You know, there's a reason that they're so good and they're running up front. And secondly, like I said, I think that dirt bike came into play. You know, there's a way to flow and a way to flow around a track. And it's just something that I feel like I have. So that part's clicked. And now I'm just really learning like the racecraft, light buggy, you know, with the invert coming through the field. Connor makes it look a lot easier than what it is. But just navigating it, when I get clean air, I feel like I can damn near run with Connor. You know, I'm just not that far off with him, but it's getting to that clean air that I'm struggling to learn to get up there.
So do you like feel your like backpedaling coming from like mod and your motocross? Do you feel like you have to lay out more because of the car count and like the slower pace, or is it more fast paced than we think?
No, I mean, I think the hard adjustment for me is coming from motocross, you can get through the field a lot quicker. So like in light buggy, you want to make your moves early when we're all packed up, but the moves don't happen as fast. So like ERX, I really derailed my weekend. For some reason, I thought I could cross over in the rhythm section. Like it was like a bonsai move that I thought was going to work. And normally it would on like when I was racing motocross, but like just learning what the car does, when you fall in line, how the car, like the distances close, that kind of part of the racing is really just where I'm at to get up front, I guess.
How far, like, where do you feel like you are in that process of maybe doing less learning and more just pure racing?
We're close. Sunday at Lena was a nice eye-opener for me because I got it stuck behind Connor for most of that race. At the halfway, I basically got on his bumper, and there was a couple of points where it was like, aha. And I saw him make a move, and then I tried to mimic it, and I could almost feel what he was doing there. So I've been going back and watching that and seeing how I can improve on those situations. But we're close. I mean, I'm ready to just hammer down and focus forward. But it gets kind of squirrely in those beginning parts of the races. So like just navigating through and getting to that clean air That's really important.
I think what's underappreciated in light buggy and 1600 to a degree is that, like, the margins are so slim. You really have to be close to perfect to quickly get through traffic, and setting up a pass is not just one corner ahead, it's three corners ahead or a whole lap ahead. And, you know, one mistake isn't just a matter of two car lengths, it's a matter of maybe two spots.
Yeah, I mean, you're spot on. So at Crandon, when we were able to get that win, we were already thinking about the pass down in the gravel pit because we were quick up in the barn corner. So, like, it all started down in the mid course and needing to be close to the bumper lead in the mid course to get that kind of run. You know, one thing that I watched, like, Evan Hockers is really good at slicing through the field, but he gets really aggressive, right? And that's another aspect of it, is the controlled aggression. You know, I don't want to be the guy that's just slamming in and bending Nerf bars or doing anything like that as I cut my teeth through this. But I do need to elbow up a little bit more and take those opportunities when they're there. But I think that's all part of the learning process of it.
Yeah, you have to be aggressive to a point, right? I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, you don't want to get trapped just because you're taking too much time coming through the field.
Yeah, and like I said, once I get to the clean air, I really feel like I can run with the best of them. Like, I'm not too far off Connor, but it's just getting there. And I feel like there's a, like, you get sucked into the pace if you don't make those passes quick enough. So really just understanding that. But year two, I'm kind of sitting right where I wanted to be sitting, if I'm being honest with you.
What was your expectation of yourself coming into this year after you finished strong at the end of last year?
We had pretty modest goals. So last year we accomplished what we wanted to accomplish. And that was just getting into the invert and finishing top 10 in points. So I snuck in with a 10th in points and kind of left the season with my head held high. We had a lot of lessons learned and got some good drives in at the end. This year we wanted to get on the box, and I'm shooting for top 5 in points. So getting that win at Crandon was above and beyond any expectations that I could have had. The second place at Lena kind of felt more about where we belonged, but now we're battling for 5th in points. We had a couple of bad weekends and learning how to process the whole season now. But those were the goals coming into the year, a top 5 in points and a podium. So we're pacing for them.
Would you rather the big track or would you rather a small track? Like, coming into Bark River, are you favoring yourself at a better chance stretching out those straightaways, or would you rather the tight bullring?
I like the long tracks. The bullrings are fun. It's just kind of start and stoppy, but the way that these big tracks flow and in these light buggies, how you're just hammer down and finding how to not scrub the speed. Like, I like the big tracks.
So you mentioned that, you know, Connor and Colin, they get a lot of gloss for what they do on the racetrack, but how much they've grown behind the scenes. Like you said, Connor doing a whole bunch of fabrication work and setting up cars. Colin's starting to build all the engines for the whole team. How have those guys been as coaches for you?
Oh, they're great, man. I've been spending a lot of time with Colin this year because I've been helping him with motors. I just tear him down. I'm trying to learn as much as I can through these things, but just the garage time with Colin has been a lot of fun. Getting to see him, like you said, behind the scenes, seeing their personalities and whatnot. But I mean, Connor, he's the same way. They want me to get fast. You know, Connor's looking for a challenge. It's same with Taylor. You know, he wants us to get up there and battle with them. And they've just going on track walks. They'll say, hey, this is where we're breaking at. And, you know, here, look for this and try to enter a little wide. So they open up the playbook. No doubt about it. They're very helpful and they're instrumental to getting me to where I'm at.
And when it comes to Taylor, the sense that I get is that maybe to borrow a cliche from like football, he's like the locker room leader type of guy. It seems like he's outspoken. I'm even thinking about his podium interviews from Lena just a couple weeks ago. Is he kind of the rah-rah guy behind the scenes that like lights the fire under everybody else?
He's definitely our leader, right? Like, so with the RNS team, it was something that him and the twins started. I'm a secondary. I'm just trying to contribute how I can, but, you know, we do turn to him. You know, he is the one leading the charge on it. I wouldn't say like rah, rah, you know, pumping us up, like, getting ready to hit the field or anything, but he gives me very good, instruction. He gives me, and he, you know, reminds me to believe in myself a lot, which means a lot. Cause sometimes I take little setbacks a lot harder than I should. And he does a nice job reminding me that I'm still cutting my teeth in the sport and that I'm doing a good job. But, you know, we're getting behind him, man. He's locked in a points battle right now in that 1600 single buggy class. And we're all in. We want him to get it. And we're going to do everything we can to make sure that happens.
Yeah, and I'm sure Taylor knows this, but with adjusted points, with the rounds dropped, I think he's tied right now with Seafelt.
Yeah, I think
which has been a super fun rivalry.
It really has. And, you know, I'm a huge Mike Seafelt fan as well. You know, so I try to keep my peace. Obviously, I want Taylor to win it all. He's one of my best friends, but I have so much respect for Mike Seafelt. You know, those guys pitted near us last year, and Mike's just been a really good guidance for me, you know, just talking to me about things that he sees on the track and, you know, his encouragement in my driving. So, you know, I'll be happy if either of them win, but I really want Taylor to get it done, and RNS is going to make sure that we get that done.
I mean, everyone will help each other to a point, right? But it's up to you to build off of what they give you to continue. And I see it a lot. Like, either you can drive or you can't drive. And what you're doing is really working well because you're taking that info and feeding off them, and then you're laying it out on the track. A lot of guys can't do that. So you got to be pretty proud of you and your team.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that compliment. And I'm trying my hardest. You know, I feel like I'm a racer at heart, right? So, like, I know how to make things move. And I've gone through the struggle. You know, I think that's part of racing as well. Last year wasn't easy. And this year, you know, between some of the mud races and yeah. I've had to fix an arm, you know, a left front arm from Crandon from hitting the culvert, and, you know, right rear drum from another incident. But, like, putting in that work at the track, it makes it a lot more rewarding too. So I know a lot more about light buggies than I did 2 years ago. And I think that helps.
When it comes to the whole team as a group, not just, you know, Colin and Connor and Taylor, but, you know, yourself, Drew, and everybody behind the scenes, Bill and Dave and everybody else, is the expectation around the pit, you know, success, is that the expectation? Everybody's going to do well, or everybody's going to take big steps forward all the time?
I mean, I think we have to have that expectation as our own individuals, right? Like, when I joined RNS, I knew that I wanted to uphold what they were putting out. Connor, Colin, and Taylor have been putting out a solid product from a buggy racing standpoint for the last 5 years. So I knew when I joined the team that I wanted to match that intensity and match that level. So I would say yes, you know, especially moving forward. We got a lot of plans and a lot of career goals that we talked about, and that is our plan. You know, you guys gave us a shout out in the light buggy race about how we look like a pro pit, and, you know, that means a lot to us, and that is what we're looking to do. And we want to put that presentation out there, and part of it is putting podiums up there and running up front so we can talk to you guys.
When you are under the awning with guys who have already had a ton of success, you know, between Colin and Connor, they have 4 light buggy championships already. Is that any extra pressure on you to, like, live up to a standard, or do you not really need that, the extra motivation, I guess?
No, I mean, I think that'd be a pretty hard standard to live up to. Right. Those guys are winning like 10 of the 14 and 12, you know what I mean? But it's where I want to be. You know, I fully plan on slotting into Connor's role next year in light buggy, and that's what I'm going to push myself to do. I want to be a guy that's winning half the races, you know, like, I think that's just the racer in us all. But I think it's more so like they had that expectation for me as well. You know, when Taylor asked me to drive the car, you know, like, he saw something in me as well, and the twins giving me the great equipment and stuff to drive and helping me out so much. So it's just, it's cool, you know, like, we're really pushing as a group to just get up front and get our names out there. And it's been a really fun summer.
So when you're heading into the Bark River races, I mean, you're talking the two biggest tracks to end the season, but what are your sights set on for the final 4 rounds?
So I did my math today too, and I'm sitting about 15 points out of where I want to be. So really, I'm just trying to put together 4 good races. With Bark River being a home sponsor for my, or a home race for my sponsors, Midwest Truck Driving School and North Country Electrical Line and Heavy Equipment Schools, I want a podium this weekend. To get 2 podiums would be even better, but really want to get on the box for them, give them the love and support that they deserve for getting behind me. And then going into Crandon, I feel like I'm really fast at Crandon. So I'm going to really put the loud pedal down, as you say, and, you know, take a swing at a ring. You know, I think it would be really cool, and I think we have the chance to do it if things fall in our way. So that's really what I'm planning on running up front these last 4.
Yeah, confidence is huge, and Shane and I talk about it all the time. And if you don't have confidence, it makes it rough and a long year. You have to stay positive about as much as you can. I mean, you're going to have your bad days, but it's about bouncing off your bad days to make it a good day.
For sure. And it helps going to tracks that you've had success at and that you feel fast at. So definitely looking forward to them.
Looking a little bit out longer term, and I know there's, you know, we're in the middle of this season, but, you know, looking forward to maybe next year and beyond, it seems like you're committed to, you know, staying as part of R&S Motorsports, staying in off-road. What do you think the future looks like for you, 26 and beyond, let's say?
Well, running two cars is hard. And I really like aspects of both. So my future goals is I want to find a way to mesh the two. And I think that's going to be in the off-road scene. But in the immediate future, we're going to be buggy drivers. You know, with Connor exiting the light buggy class next year, I'm hopefully going to carry the torch in the light buggy and keep that championship in house. That's certainly my plans headed into next year. And then beyond, you know, it takes a lot to go racing, especially at those higher levels. So really just trying to get the program in place, get my name out there, try to find some sponsor backing and just build the program to be in a position to move up. Right now we're happy in the light buggy. It's fun. But I would like to find a way to like mesh that sport mod power with the light buggy off road, which, you know, in all honesty, I'd like to get into a pro spec here in 2 to 3 years if I possibly could.
Oh, heck yeah. That would be badass. You know, you always want to have a goal, and if you can make it happen, that makes it that much better. But what you're doing is crazy and great for all of us. It keeps it exciting. And there's some days where when the twins get out front, we say it time and time again, it gets really obnoxious, but it's cool to see some guys taming people, right?
I thought you were gonna soften that a little bit and use a nicer word, be a little bit more diplomatic there, Brent.
I'm saying it the way I did. No, no, they really do deserve every bit of credit that we give them throughout the years, because they just learned the right way to do it. They had great guys behind them like you do now, and you got to take what's given to you and be ready for anything that's thrown at you.
Yeah, for sure. And those guys paid their dues. And what they're doing is truly hard. Like, I can honestly say it, they make it look so easy. You can throw anybody in a good equipment, but you still have to sit in that seat and drive that car. And,
right.
You know, they make it look really, really easy. And, you know, if I can notch my name in the buggy lures like those guys, like, we're doing all right.
You know, I remember, and I have talked about this on a podcast episode a couple of years ago, but I was sitting around a campfire once with Ryan Stingle, and he said that Connor and Colin completely changed the way that light buggies have to race to go fast.
I would agree. I mean, I even saw it from when Taylor started racing. They only had a couple of years ahead of him, but and seeing it now, you know, you can kind of see the tiers, right? Like Connor, he looks different than the rest of the cars when we're out there. And, you know, Greg's a great competitor. He's been so much fun to race with. And Ryan has been great help getting my transmission all set up. So the cool thing about light buggy is they're helpful, man. They want everyone to do well and run out there. And that's been at such a refreshing pace with the off-road scene.
Hey, us buggy dorks, we're a family.
Absolutely,
you know that,
man.
Right now.
For sure. Anything you guys need, come see R&S. We'll open up the book of secrets. You know, one big reward, and I want to point this out, another tip of my cap to Taylor. We've kind of been helping Johnny Pyburn. So this last weekend, you know, he came on track walk with me, and I shared my shift points and my break points, and Colin was helping working on his car. I know we did a motor for him, and seeing him have some good results was really cool. You know, you guys even pointed out that he was showing some good speed, but, you know, Taylor initiated that one, and you know, we're here to help. So Johnny kind of took advantage of it. And I think it was cool to see him run up front there. And I look forward to seeing his last four races at the end of the year, too.
You know, after this episode drops, your pit's going to be just crawling with all the other light buggy guys, right?
I'm going to be the only light buggy guy next year. So Connor and Colin and Taylor, they're ready to open up the books and make me work for it. So come on by, guys. We'll help you out.
Man, it's been really enlightening to hear what goes on behind the scenes at R&S Motorsports. And man, it sounds like you've surrounded yourself with some really great people.
Yeah. The really thing that I guess I just want to give a shout out to Taylor Roloff. I know I mentioned his name a lot, but without him, I'm not in off-road. I probably, you know, I was a 90s baby, so I saw it on ESPN2 in the speed worlds, but I was a dirt biker growing up. And without him, none of this is possible. None of the R&S stuff is possible. So, huge shout out to him. You know, Colin's racing his second single buggy car. So just what he's done in the off-road scene and helping other guys out and expanding it, he deserves a lot of credit. And like I said, we're pushing for him to win a championship. So anybody out there, stop on down by R&S, give him some knuckles, let him know you're behind him. We're pushing for it.
Well, hey, Tom, we appreciate you taking this time with us on the podcast, and best of luck to you up at Bark River and the rest of this year. We'll hopefully catch up with you, if not on the podium, in the pits.
I appreciate the heck of it, guys. We'll see you at Bark River. Take care.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Well, Brent, your hometown track, your hometown race, Bark River, looming just a couple days away now. Like I said, I think one of the things that always makes Bark River so exciting, aside from that it's an awesome track with really passionate fans, is that for the drivers who are a little bit further back in the points, it's desperation time. Ryan Beat certainly sees himself as a title contender in Pro 2, and like I said, 49 points back. He's got a lot of ground to make up. Dylan Parsons, 46 points back in Pro Spec, trying to defend his championship. Again, same thing, a lot of ground for him to make up. Scott Belanger and Colt Wurzba, we talked about them. They're 35 and 40 points back in Super Stock. They've got to find it now, right?
Yeah, it's go time, like we like to say, and it's the second half of the season. It's well past that now.
Yeah.
You have to lay down your best finishes. You have to be ready. The trucks, the cars should be on point this time of the year. 90% of the drivers, they feel more confident in their driving styles and their preparation. So I think we're in for a big treat at Bark River. Bark River does not ever disappoint. As long as I've been around this sport, I mean, when you say Bark River to these drivers, they know it's a speedway, and that's what they love about it.
I think back to, I think it was 2 years ago now at Bark River, that there was, man, a series of really close finishes. I think at that point we had 18 classes, and something like 10 of the classes on Saturday of Bark River in 2023 finished within like a second at the line between first and second, some of them door to door. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Oh, I do. I do remember that. I believe Mod Cart was quick, like right up until the end.
Yeah, that awesome finish between Braden and Belanger and Superstock, where tore down the fence a little bit.
Yeah, right by the county road. Yeah, it was right after, I believe, all that rain came through too. Yeah. So we were delayed, and then it turned out to be one of the best days of racing through the year.
Yeah, really, it was. And I think, you know, not to steal any of the shine from Bark River, but I think some of the intensity that ramps up too is drivers knowing that Crandon is looming ahead as well. You know, World Championship weekend, obviously that's the biggest show. That's when the drivers want to be completely dialed in. So Bark River is kind of like, you know, especially for drivers who really don't have a shot at the championship. And there's, like we said, there's a lot of those drivers, but you want to bring your A game to Crandon, and Bark River is kind of your last chance to really lock in and find the magic formula, right? I think that adds to the intensity.
Right, it does. And Bark River, it gives you that drive going into Crandon. Your eyes are always set at Crandon because, right, if you're back in the points, now's the time. Get a great weekend at Bark River. Maybe be in that version for Crandon because it's all about that land rush start as well.
One thing, and I'm sure I've said this on this podcast several times over the years, but I really think Bark River has the best fans. Most passionate. I mean, fans at every racetrack get excited when the race is exciting, if there's a door-to-door finish or the pass in the final turn. But pound for pound, man, I think the fans at Bark River get more excited than anywhere else. Do you sense that? And why do you think that is? You're from the place. You grew up watching racing there. What do you think is it about Bark River and its fan base that makes them that passionate?
Well, I sense it and I feel it year after year coming into Bark River, just as a local community. You know, the Lions Club does such a big job with everything and making sure everything's given back to the community, and they really put their effort into it time and time again. And it's Bark River. It's local for me. I watch it firsthand and what they do for the sport and the track. I mean, it's one weekend, so they try to make sure everything is perfect, and what they've done for year after year has just been over the top. And I think Bark River is just the place where you want to win.
Yeah, and it's another one of those places too that I've talked about this year several times on this show that begins to feel like a second home for me. You know, I'm just through you and through being up there for race weekends, I'm starting to get to know a lot of the locals, and It's a very welcoming place too. So that's really one of the reasons I always look forward to getting up there.
Yeah, and they respect all the drivers, right? All these local fans here in Bark River. And I mean, there's friends and family on my side that are coming from Milwaukee, Madison area, and far in between. I mean, it's cool to see everyone mark their calendars for Bark River. I mean, the local community you talk about, I mean, a lot of our families, they work at like the paper mill or EMP or Stewart, and they have to lay out their schedules a year in advance. So right. Their biggest vacation time is the off-road races. So it's really cool.
Yeah, it's so great to see that commitment. It really does echo what I saw growing up in Crandon. Same kind of deal. Is the fans that are going to be at Bark River this weekend, a lot of them are not first generation fans. A lot of them are second generation, third generation that, you know, grew up with their hands up against the fence, just like you and I did.
Oh yeah. And it's cool to go to Bark River, you know, just from watching as a kid growing up, and you remember Todd Wallace, the Vandermissens, Brad Erickson. I mean, it's cool to walk through the crowd. And if you keep your eyes wide open, you'll see a lot of these olden day racers showing up to still watch this sport. I know a handful of them that'll be in Bark River that didn't even go to any races this year. They just love to show up at Bark River.
Yeah, some of those names you mentioned, oddly enough, are the reason that I go up on the hill for the band on Saturday night for a little while to hang out, because I know I talk to Brad Erickson once a year, but I will talk to him every single year because I'll run into him up on the hill.
Yeah, it's always great to hear all the good old stories. And you'll even have Kyle Kleiman hanging out up there, as well as Cody Kleiman. And no matter if they're racing or not, they're still a big part of our sport, and they just love to see it grow. And I think what we're doing is just going to make Bark River that much bigger and better this season.
Yeah, I'm, like I said, looking forward to it for all those reasons, for the feel-good reasons. Also looking forward to seeing Cole Mamer back in the field in Pro 4. I think that's going to add a little extra juice to Pro 4 after the truck count was down a little bit at Lena. And Bradley Morris, I think originally was planning on racing only both Crandon weekends. Just posted on social media this week, he is going to be there in Bark River racing Pro 2 along with Mayan Spaccarelli. So more juice in Pro 4 and Pro 2. That's going to just add a little bit more of that intensity that we talked about.
Oh, we love to see the truck counts just keep rising throughout the year. And you see that a lot at Bark River going into Fall Crandon. You'll see a lot of drivers coming out of the woodwork and trying to show what they have just a couple times a year. And Bradley Morris, what he did in June was unbelievable. He was so fast and people talked about him. So he's got to feel really, really well.
Yeah, for his first time, what did he say on the podium? First time racing in 7 years and finished on the podium in Pro 2 at Crandon.
Yeah, and what he's went through in his life, breaking his neck and everything and bouncing back. He was a hell of a pro light racer. I remember calling a lot of his races out west growing up, and I'm telling you, he is one to watch. And Cole Mamer, to have him back, I actually got to talk with him quite a bit this last week. I was moseying down to the track, watching a bunch of different teams test out their equipment, and he was helping Mayan Spaccarelli a lot, and he would be like, hey Brett, you know, you can see he's getting better, right? He's getting more comfy, and he's just one not only to watch on the track but off the track, how he's keeping guys in the sport and getting them more confident and comfortable. And it seems like we're saying the same, but we talk about RNS Motorsports doing it at a light buggy level. I mean, helping out other drivers to get them up to pace so they have more competition. And I see Mamer doing that in the same similar way. And I think it's great for not only him, but the sport as well.
I think I can sum up the reasons that you and I are both excited to get to Bark River. And it's because we get to hang out with a lot of people that we like.
Yeah,
I think that's what it all boils down to.
Oh, yeah. It's just a big family community in Bark River, and it's going to be fun. We got a lot of races to call, but at the same time, man, the track's awesome. They brought in a lot of dirt. They put a lot of time and effort into it. The track, the facility looks beautiful. I'm excited.
I'm excited too, and can't wait to see how the weekend unfolds at the Island Resort and Casino Off-Road Rumble in the UP. Again, if you can't join us at the racetrack, make sure you find us on Flow Racing. We're live Saturday for round 11 of the Champ Off-Road season, 9:45 a.m., and that is Eastern time. So if you're marking that down on your calendar, make sure you make note that it's Eastern time, local time up there in the Upper Peninsula. But that will do it for this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. Can't wait to hang out with all of you at Bark River this weekend. We will talk to you again very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by AmsOil.